So the unease of uncertainty is a gift because it's good stress.
This is Choose to be Curious, a show all about curiosity. We talk about research and theory, but mostly it's conversations about how curiosity shows up in work and life. I'm your host, Lynn Borton. Welcome. Come, choose to be curious with us. Certain words keep coming up in this curiosity context: exploration, innovation, creativity, trust, learning, and uncertainty. As early as 2009, psychologist Todd Kashdan helped shape our understanding of curiosity with a two-dimensional scale: the motivation to seek out knowledge and new experiences, which he thought of as stretching, and a willingness to embrace the uncertain and unpredictable nature of everyday life, or embracing. In 2015, he rolled out the five-dimensional curiosity scale, including the classic joyous exploration, along with dimensions he dubbed social curiosity, thrill-seeking, deprivation sensitivity, and most importantly for today's topic, stress tolerance, the willingness to embrace doubt, confusion, anxiety, and uncertainty. So I've had these glimmers of the tantalizing interplay of curiosity and uncertainty for some time. And then along comes Maggie Jackson, award-winning author and journalist known for her prescient writings on social trends and technology's impact on humanity, and her 2023 book, Uncertain: The Wisdom and Wonder of Being Unsure. And suddenly, the potential, the power of uncertainty busts wide open for me. As Maggie wrote in a New York Times opinion piece earlier this year, we should rethink our outdated notions of not knowing as weakness and instead discover this mindset as a strength. So, of course, my mind goes to choosing to be curious. What more can we surface about this promising intersection with uncertainty? Where and how else can we leverage the fluidity of uncertainty for ourselves, our relationships, our community? I wasn't even through her book's introduction when she slayed me with this line. Uncertainty, she wrote, unsettles us, and that is its gift. I am here for it. At a time when the world feels oh so uncertain and we're tempted to hunker down, I am delighted to have Maggie Jackson, uncertainty's champion, here to talk about leaning into what she calls wisdom in motion and where curiosity fits into all of that. So welcome, Maggie.
Thank you very much. I'm thrilled to be here with you.
I'm delighted to be having this conversation. So, you know, usually I ask people to define curiosity, but I want to ask you to define uncertainty.
Yes, I'm so glad that you asked that, because so often people, and myself included, think of uncertainty as monolithic and kind of obviously a negative, as you mentioned. But really, in brief, in a nutshell, now experts agree that there are two main kinds of uncertainty. So one is what we call the uncertainty. That's really the unknown. So it's today's unpredictability and volatility and et cetera. And that's called aleatory uncertainty. It's what humans can't fully know. So, you know, you might see a storm report, but you and the meteorologists don't really know where it'll land and what damage it'll do. That's aleatory uncertainty. And I call that, just for the purposes of being clear, I'll call that the unpredictability we face today. The second type of uncertainty is our uncertainty, epistemic uncertainty or psychological uncertainty, and that is the human response to the unknown. So when you meet something new, like that storm report or a traffic jam, you get the chance, it's kind of a metacognitive state, to recognize you've reached the limits of your knowledge. You don't know. And the traffic jam might lift and you can get to your meeting, or the storm may pass you by. It could be this, it could be that. That's being unsure. You're caught short, and there's a sense of unease and also a sense of possibility. That's uncertainty.
Yeah. I was so struck. I have what I call sort of my working definition of curiosity. I've talked to 250 people. I have heard 200 different definitions, right? But my own working definition is that choosing to be curious is acting on the idea that there's opportunity in the unknown. And this is the place where I thought, oh, these two, curiosity and uncertainty, boy, are they enmeshed. Boy, are they entwined. And I hadn't seen this before, but I saw Jackie Gottlieb, the neuroscientist Jackie Gottlieb's definition of uncertainty as another kind of knowledge. So not knowing is knowing. I find that really interesting.
Yes, it's provocative, it's counterintuitive, it's unexpected. And that when you think about it, even the metaphors related to our uncertainty give us a little hint of what we're talking about. First of all, we liken, and studies show this to be the case, we liken knowledge to be an island or kind of a safe zone, and unknowns to be a sea of roiling unknowns. I mean, uncertainty be kind of a sea of roiling unknowns. Or knowledge is the light and uncertainty is dimness or darkness. So when we begin to pick up on or open up to, or then begin to be skillful about navigating, and I say harnessing the unknown, that's when we're moving away from these kind of narrow, really islands of life. We're moving into places we don't go when we stick with what we know. That's really, I think, where the knowing comes from. And you mentioned wisdom in motion. To be uncertain is to be figuring it out, to be seeking knowledge, it's a space of possibilities. It's also a kind of provocation in and of itself physiologically. And so you get the sense that you're on the way to deeper or better or different knowledge when you're uncertain. It's really a space that in our current culture, we often denigrate because we've had hundreds of years of messaging and values related to efficiency, rationalistic ideas of intelligence related to getting a goal and moving there as, in a linear way. And very much, I think we've sort of left behind many aspects of uncertainty that are truly positive. And also, I'll just add too, that I'm not talking about limitless uncertainty. I mean, the goal is not to remain in limbo.
Right.
That's really, there are guardrails around uncertainty, nor do we ever want anyone to be uncertain about where their next meal comes from or where they're, whether they have a roof over their heads. There are limits to uncertainty, but along the way to getting the answers that we need and want, that's, we can do so much better about understanding and harnessing uncertainty. It's not just also a matter of getting comfortable with it. I try to stay away from that because there is discomfort here, and all for a great cause and in ways that are really make us fully alive.
One of the words that you do use is spacious, and it is a different kind of experience to feel like you have a little space to think about something rather than feeling really constrained by time or social pressures or all of the other things. And so thinking about giving ourselves a spaciousness is, I think, another gift of this whole process. Let me just say that. But I want to talk about what tickled me about feeling a little circular about curiosity and uncertainty, because, of course, curiosity's roots are in around collecting information of uncertain value. So from its very start, it's kind of grounded in uncertainty of a sort of softer sort, not that we don't know what to do kind of uncertainty, but like, I don't know what I'm going to do with this, but I'm going to tuck it in my pocket and take it with me anyway. Does it feel kind of chicken and eggy to you, curiosity and uncertainty?
I guess so. I think of curiosity as being one of a strategy or mindset that goes hand in hand with uncertainty, that can be kind of tucked under the wing of uncertainty. Mm. We can be navigating the uncertainty, the unknown, and be curious and allow ourselves to harness the curiosity. So therefore, it's almost the environment we operate in. But going back to that binary definition of uncertainty, there's also our, you know, sense of being unsure that it links to curiosity as well, the inner sense. So one way that curiosity and uncertainty is linked in this way is because of that tolerance of the stress of the unknown. I think that's a very, very important component of both curiosity and uncertainty. And I read a lot of Kashtan's work as well. In order to, you know, as Paul Sylvia, a creativity researcher, told me, it's not that people who are highly curious don't feel awkward or uncomfortable, but that doesn't stop them from learning and sticking their nose into things. And that's why curious people are drawn to difficult art and they're open to evidence that's contrary to their arguments or opinions, that they ask tough questions, that they're willing to dissent at work. You know, all of that is part and parcel. This is not the kind of, you know, six-year-old, gee whiz kind of curiosity. This is a deeper human, real kind of curiosity. And I think it's just to, again, dig into those links, we have to start with the unease of uncertainty. It's really an important way to understand, I think, curiosity. So for instance, when you do hit something, when you encounter something new, ambiguous, unexpected, like the traffic jam or whatnot, or an ambiguous memo from your boss, you gain that unease, aka a stress response. Literally, when you are unsure, you neurotransmitters and hormones kind of cascade through our minds and our bodies that instigate a kind of, scientists call it arousal.
Yeah.
So the unease of uncertainty is a gift because it's good stress. So now they're beginning to find out the amazing positive changes in your brain when you're unsure. And that, you know, includes bolstered working memory, more receptivity to data. The priorities of your brain have changed. You are interested in that new thing, and that's important. And so one neuroscientist told me the uncertainty is the brain telling itself there's something to be learned here. So in other words, it's a signal, it's a readiness. And you can wield your curiosity as well, but the uncertainty itself is the kind of frontline state that's readying you to learn. And that's why we really shouldn't deny it, avoid it, retreat from it.
You're listening to Choose to Be Curious, a show all about curiosity. I'm your host, Lynn Borton, and I'm joined today by author and journalist Maggie Jackson. We're talking about the gift of uncertainty.
And the other important point is that the arousal of uncertainty is not the same thing as the fear response. We have many different kind of stress systems, and fear is a shutting down. You can do flight or fight or primitive reactions, but even your brain is shutting down from higher order thought because you're going into survival mode. Uncertainty, our personal uncertainty, is approach mode or performance mode. I think that's really opening. And so then you can begin to understand why the actively highly curious personality is able to tolerate the stress of the unknown. They're the ones that aren't backing away from that incredible on your toes activation that uncertainty allows us.
Well, this is why I try to get away from the state trait debate around curiosity and talk about it as a choice, that it's a strategy. It's a way of framing the arousal response. We can interpret that elevated heart rate and that hyper alert sensation as, whoa, I'm scared, or like, whoa, this is cool. What's next? Have you found anything that helps people make that reframe? I mean, are there tricks and tips around that?
Yes, there are actually. And that's such a good question because, I mean, we all maybe have been in the situation. I remember I was giving a big speech and there was a sort of a, you know, it was a difficult situation. And I started being fearful in the middle of the speech. You know, I was obviously alert and I was, you know, going into doing my performance and giving this speech. But at the same time, my mind strayed to, oh, maybe I'm not doing well, or maybe the organizer isn't happy. Yeah. So this syncs to what's called outcome fixation. That is fear of failure, or even just fixating on the reward. You know, I'm going to get paid, I'm going to get that bonus. That moves our cognitive resources away from the process that gets us a good outcome to the outcome just when we need to be in the moment and be open to the signal of uncertainty. And of course, with that goes curiosity. So that's one way, that's one reason curiosity, as I'm sure you've talked about with people, is to be curious is kind of a way to tame our anxieties. Anxiety is the fear of the unknown. So if you can understand that this arousal is positive, so dial back on outcome fixation. And in athletics, top athletes use something called cue words. That's really in the middle of the crunch in the game, in the high stakes situation. They might have a personal mantra that says, "In the game, Maggie," or "Focus now." You know, kind of a gentle prod. It moves them back into that space of positive uncertainty. I think that's a wonderful little trick. And I saw, watching the Olympics last summer, athletes talking to themselves before, you know, the final dive or the track and field. So that's one way. And the second really easy strategy we can do is just expect the unpredictable. So if you walk into the Monday morning meeting and you think, oh, more of the same, blah, 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 you're actually toning down your ability to, again, register that signal of uncertainty and get on your toes. So studies show that people who are learning in dynamic environments, who expect the unpredictable, who just, you know, have it on the back burner or have it in mind, hey, things could change.
I love it. So I want to shift gears a little bit, because you have a wonderful section of the book about pausing and fallow periods. And when I started in this section, I'm thinking, okay, right. You know, we pause, we have almost a reaction of a stumble with, it's like, I don't know what to do. You know, there's sort of the pause. We don't instantly respond. And I thought of the wonderful line about, don't just do something, sit there. And actually make use of that pause, like make that space just a little more spacious. But then you go on to talk about fallow periods, which is a more extended kind of a pause, as what I, in reading, thought of it as sort of a softer form of uncertainty, that we're not in hot pursuit of a goal. We're not exactly sure what we're doing. And I thought, what a lovely on-ramp welcome mat to uncertainty this idea of the fallow time is. And so I wanted to give you an opportunity to talk about that, because I think it's such a different feel than some of the other parts of the conversation about uncertainty.
Yes, I was trying to cast a wide net in and around uncertainty, do a kind of a walkabout, see it from very many different lenses. And fallow time, as you say, is pausing, it's resting, it's napping, it's sleeping, or it's setting aside a problem, even for weeks or months or years, as Darwin did so well. And these spaces, when he wasn't working on the Origin of Species, were actually prefaced some of his biggest leaps forward intellectually, which is fascinating. And so this fallow time, which we so often think of as negative in our contemporary society, as nothingness, are actually times of enormous activity in the brain. So by literally doing nothing, as we define nothing today, you know, not goal-oriented, not linear, not hurrying, not forcing it through, etc., or rushing to an answer, by doing all that, we allow our brain to do multiple different kinds of important work. You know, for instance, just by pausing, you actually let your mind catch up to your experiences. I mean, think of it during the day, or we're experiencing so much of this world. By simply pausing for even 5 or 6 minutes after learning new material, you can improve your memory for it by up to 20%. And that was true even for people with Alzheimer's, which is really stunning. Amazing. So your mind is digesting and trying to curate, because, I mean, there are so many terrible metaphors that we retain related to the brain. The brain is a computer. The memory is kind of a hard drive. We upload, we're hardwired. All of that really isn't true. The brain is a living, organic, branching, knowledge-based kind of tree of knowledge for us. And it takes time. It takes time chemically, you know, electrically, and in just all ways for the brain to percolate and digest. Of course, we do this while we're actively learning, you're percolating, you're digesting. But scientists really do think that these quiet times are extra fecund, extra fertile for the kinds of meaning making and memory making that I'm describing. Your mind also, over the course of a night or even in short moments, is trying to not just lay down those memories and code them, but also draw meaning.
Yeah, make meaning there.
We can't remember everything. So you're abstracting knowledge to say, over the pattern of my experiences, I see this to be the case with their behavior or with my knowledge. And that it particularly happens during these quiet times. The other thing I think is so interesting is pausing may be a wonderfully unexpected route to combating the echo chamber nature of our minds, i.e. confirmation bias. Because when you're remembering, it's easier for you to remember what you already know, what you agree with, what's not contradictory. When you're trying to remember something that's contradictory, that's challenging to your opinion, and that should be important today, it takes more time. And so the pausing, the resting can help us actually assimilate opinions different from our own. And Darwin knew that. He actually was, his golden rule, quote unquote, was to write down all evidence contrary to his theories, because he knew that would be most likely to be slipping from his memory, which I think is a really wonderful use of uncertainty.
Oh, that's wonderful. Okay, so that's a great bridge to a question about curiosity practices. I usually ask people if they have curiosity practices. I want to make it a twofer with you. Do you have what you would consider a curiosity practice, ways that you bring curiosity forward, or an uncertainty practice of any sort?
Well, I would think in a very non-deliberate, kind of a improvisational way, I have curiosity practices in that I constantly really do try to seek evidence or opinions different from my own. I try to remain open. I try to walk on to the other side of what I'm seeing or framing or understanding. So that can take the form of empathy, but it's also just when I'm looking at research or writing a chapter or something like that. So I call that being my own editor. You're just be curious about what you don't easily think or first think at a glance. As far as uncertainty practices, again, I also feel as though I've learned so much from the research, and we've talked about the curious personality, but also there's an uncertainty personality. Uncertainty tolerance is a trait, but also a state that's getting a lot of scientific attention. And people who are tolerant of uncertainty are more flexible thinkers. They like surprises, etc. People who are intolerant of uncertainty are more rigid thinkers who, you know, argue to win and things like that. The good news is that it's mutable. And just by biting off a little bit more of the unknown, we can bolster our tolerance for uncertainty. So I swim in the Atlantic Ocean every day, year round, whenever I'm in town or by the shore, wherever I can be.
Wow.
And I always loved it, but I realized one day this was my daily dose of uncertainty. This is my practice. And we can try a new dish in a restaurant, or, you know, for me, traveling somewhere without a guidebook is kind of a uncertainty practice, which I'm trying to do more. And so open to surprise, you actually get better at it. You realize this is not a disaster, like a blind date with the world.
Oh, nice. Well, I have a little uncertainty practice for you. I have my big jar of wannabe analogies. Are you game?
Yes, absolutely.
Okay. So here it is, actual big jar. There are slips of paper in here with random words. I'm going to take one for you, one for me, one for the audience, and we're going to make an analogy to curiosity, to whatever is on here. Okay. Yours is a rec room. How is curiosity? Like a rec room? Mine is sand, and I have one for the audience. So do you want to give it a shot, or do you want me to go first?
Oh, I can give it a shot, but do you mean W-R-E-A-C-K or R-E-C?
This is REC, as in recreation room.
Oh,
I guess.
I get it. Oh, well, I think curiosity is so related to play. And, you know, people who are curious, you know, have more pleasurable moments in life. And I think it's so, so highly related to play. That's why children are so curious, because they're always interested in surprises all around us. So curiosity is very much like a big rec room in our minds.
I love it. I love it. Very nice. Okay. How is curiosity like sand? You know, I think we think of sand in its masses, in its aggregate, but sand is lots of little itty bitty things, each of them different from the other, sometimes pointy, sometimes rounded, made from all sorts of materials that we kind of lump into the category sand. And I think curiosity is like that. We lump it as one thing when really it's a lot of different things from a lot of different sources with a lot of different textures and feels to it. So
that's great. I love that.
Curiosity is like sand.
I love that.
And audience, yours is turtleneck. How is curiosity like a turtleneck? Let me know. Instagram, Facebook, hashtag analogy. Well, Maggie, holy cow, this was just great. Thank you so much.
Absolutely. My pleasure. I think we could talk about uncertainty and curiosity for many more hours, but what a wonderful conversation. Thank you so much.
You've been listening to Choose to Be Curious. I'm your host, Lynn Borton. Thank you for joining us here today. You can find all of my shows on my website at choosetobecurious.com. I hope you'll follow me here, there, and on Facebook and Instagram at Choose to Be Curious, where you can share your turtleneck analogy, hashtag analogy. Many thanks to my delightful guest, Maggie Jackson. Links to her work and that New York Times article I mentioned on my website. Thanks too to Sean Ballack for our theme music. And this is Uncertain Ground by Duck Lake via Blue Dot Sessions. I hope you'll join us again next time. Until then, choose to be curious.
I'm optimistic. You know, we do live in a world that pressures us to be quick and sure, and we have devices that offer neat pet answers. And yet, at the same time, I think we're really on the cusp of a seismic change in humanity's relationship to not knowing. The sciences being gathered, medicine, AI, in business, in so many different, in psychology, people are really interested in understanding uncertainty. So now we can kind of trade our outdated, insufficient misconceptions of this aspect of humanity that's within us and around us, and start to really harness uncertainty as a productive force. And that is so exciting.